Well, episode number 40, DJMCloud.com podcast with me, Daniel J. McKeown. Today's July 21st, 2012. Just seen on Twitter that it appears, and it's confirmed on his website, that left-wing journalist Alexander Colburn has died. His partner, Jeffrey St. Clair, in the website counterpunch.org, just posted an obituary for him on the site. And it's a big loss because this guy was for real in terms of taking a skeptical, left-leaning, but not dogmatic view of the world. And I often read Counterpunch, and you know, they have a range of voices, but a lot of them are very valuable, and they certainly go beyond what you're gonna see, you know, in the so-called mainstream media. And the mainstream media is a very narrow world, to the extent that not just left-wing figures, but far-right figures sometimes have to carve out their own niche on the internet. And one of those people is Glenn Beck. He's not on Fox News anymore.
So when you wrote this letter, then Keith Ellison comes out. And Keith Ellison is, he has a record of being the mafia hitman.
Well, he has a long record of being associated with CARE and with the Muslim Brotherhood. CARE is an unindicted co-conspirator and stated in the largest terrorist financing case that we've had in the United States of America. And so he came out.
That's that bullshit line they use about Council for Islamic American Relations or whatever that thing is. It's such bullshit. Like, I mean, I've heard, and that's just a right-wing talking point, unindicted co-conspirator. You know, those trumped-up cases against those organizations, and they didn't even prosecute CARE, so then all these right-wing idiots in the media, like Michelle Bachmann, talk about, like, how they're an unindicted co-conspirator. Like, doesn't that seem slanderous, sort of? Mm-hmm. But it's kind of funny that, like, you don't hear about Glenn Beck and Michelle Bachmann and the media decided to stop paying attention to him. Why is that?
Well, she no longer became a contender.
And so then now what's happened is the attack machine has been turned on myself and the other members of Congress who have been asking the questions that somehow we're the Muslim haters, we're the witch hunters, we're the new Joe McCarthyites.
Well, she makes a pretty good case herself, doesn't she? She just describes the way she really is. Like, it's one of those things. Like, she's not a very self-aware politician. She's not, you know, her tactics are McCarthy-like. And, you know, she's even from the Northern Plains.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason why she identified, you know, the way she was being treated is because she was acting like those three things. And America doesn't tolerate that anymore.
Yeah. You know, I put the record button on while I was playing the clips in the podcast recording, and Jessica is with me. It's a few minutes after I started the recording. And I had on my list show notes, the Lakewood. This is one of those shows where I have show notes beforehand, so I'm just trying to write down stuff as I talk. Lakewood Happy Hour Garden Party. Okay, so we went to this party. I don't know. Like, that's just the way to describe it. I don't know. But you know, okay, so it was cool. And there were some people there, and Jessica knew a handful of people. I knew a couple. And there's somebody I didn't know, and she had her hands all full. And it was one of those introductions where people are like, oh, hey, you know, I don't know. Like, they're introducing me and us to each other. And she didn't have any free hands, and she kind of, I don't know, signaled a little bit. And so I just was kind of joking. Like, I was like, yeah, well, you know, I don't like to be a handshake enforcer anyway. Like I'll shake hands, you know, but I'm not a really big fan of being a handshake enforcer. And it really, I don't know, it didn't really go over. It was a kind of a strange moment. You know, because, like, I guess I go along with the handshakes, but it is kind of weird to touch people you don't know, and, you know, it is strange. And then she had a good line about how, well, I got my hands full. That's a good thing because I'm a hugger or something like that. So, you know, I mean, she diffused the situation. But, yeah, it was awkward to talk about handshakes, but, like, people do handshakes. And again, not most people like absolutely refuse to do it or anything, but just drawing attention to it. It's almost like maybe they'd rather you just refuse.
Yeah, it is an interesting cultural phenomenon. I never really thought
about that. And a lot of people try to shake hands, crush other people's hands. It's really it's kind of strange. It's kind of dumb.
Yeah, you get weird soft ones or sweaty ones or sideways ones or half. You like they just touch your fingers. They don't really want to do it.
Yeah, I don't know any, like, special secret handshakes, but I think a lot of people, they might go for a secret handshake and then, you know, come up empty. There is this really cool sketch that Jessica made of me on her iPad, and I put out, I posted it on my website. I have it as my avatar for SoundCloud now too. I was thinking I was thinking about using it as an avatar for multiple sites, but you know how it is, like, you know, sometimes you put different avatars on sites, and it's a really good one for something like SoundCloud. It would be good for Twitter too. If you want to see this picture, it's a really good picture. You can search for like sketch or something, and yeah, sketch and Jessica in the search box at djmcloud.com. But you can find it in the show notes to podcast number 40 at djmcloud.com. And you know, if you want to send some feedback to the podcast, send an email to djmcloud@sf3am.com. We've got two different goat man type figures to discuss, so we're gonna get to that later when we pick up part two. Did you hear that there is a supposed goat man in Utah?
I did not.
There's a guy in a crude goat costume hanging out with goats, with real goats, in Utah. And goat hunting season is coming up, supposedly. I mean, of course, it's appalling that people are like shooting wild goats or whatever, but apparently they get shot in Utah, and apparently there's a person who is hanging out with goats. There's grainy pictures. There's somebody that posted on Reddit about it. So it's really shady, and I think there's a good chance it's a hoax. But I also think there's a good chance there's somebody that isn't a Gavakashi hanging out with goats, you know? I mean, it's also, it's a good story. I'm not sure I really believe it, you know, but it's a pretty good story, you know, like, you just, somebody just goes into the mountains and just hangs out with a herd of wild goats.
I love it. I hope it's real.
Yeah, the people in Utah, I don't know, Department of Natural Resources or that type of bureaucrat are looking down on it. Like, I, you know, I don't know if he knows about the danger from the, you know, the hunting and the things that, that like, he's trying to make it about what the other goats might do. You know, you never know what a goat is going to do. Like, come on. Like, I guess they could, like, ram you or something. But really, is it really that scary, you know?
They're usually really sweet. And Dan and I want to get a pet goat when we have some acreage and a little farm because I think they'll be a cool pet.
Yeah, I think a domesticated kind of goat would be really fun. Wild goats probably would be a little wily and unpredictable. But, you know, I mean, you got to... I would say, I don't know. I think it's a pretty funny story, but I don't know if I really buy into it. So then I was looking at that on the internet, and it turns out there's another goat man. There's a goat man of Maryland that's like a mythical monster goat-human hybrid or something that might just be based on local hillbilly fears of Satan or monsters in the woods or something, but I don't know. It's this, it's the goat man of Maryland, and there's like this legendary figure, so there's that too. So I mean, I'm not really sure what, I think most people consider it to be fake, but there's a write-up about the goat man of Maryland on AmericanMonsters.com. Like, whereas the Goat Man of Utah is the one that's trying to make it their way, supposedly.
Wow. Who knew that there are two goat men out there?
Well, I have been using the so-called Apple Magic Trackpad instead of a mouse with my iMac. And you know, I think that it's pretty usable. You get pretty good at doing it. I had had this trackpad for about a year, but I added that to already using a magic mouse. So I'd have the trackpad on the left, the magic mouse on the right, and I would often just go over to the mouse. Occasionally I'd put my Logitech, it's actually kind of an older Logitech mouse, but I have a Logitech mouse that I would plug into and use that. But I'd use a mouse and the trackpad. So in practice, I never really converted to being like a full-time trackpad user or like a very frequent trackpad user. Now I've kind of done that. There's a blog post by Jeff Atwood that I was reading, and you can see the link in the show notes. This was like a really kind of a very broad set of what do you call it, programming jargon. But there's one, number five, that I really like. Some of them are really stupid. I really like the duck number five. You can go and read it at CodyHorror.com. If you want to read the post, but it's it's a feature that you put in so that there won't be other unnecessary changes, because your manager will be able to tell you to just take that feature out. You intentionally put in a stupid feature. Be lucky enough to get some help from Jessica. She's already given me some interesting kind of design concepts that I think sound good today if we're going to do a font for our Lovebirds consulting site. But I've been trying to use this Glyphs program for the Mac, and it's kind of cool. I haven't really gotten too far into making an actual credible typeface. You know, like making an actual font is very, it's a very long process, but I think it's pretty cool. I am looking forward to making a font or maybe a few, and then being able to have a site that's all my own design, including like the way the text is presented.
That's really cool. Yeah, I would love to help you build a font. We can share that with everybody.
Yeah, I wonder if you need your own font, and we can kind of collaborate with each other. Or like, but it's a very personal kind of expression. Or maybe we can actually, you know, just like do like be partners on a fine. You know, it'd be cool to figure that out. There's that Ouya project on Kickstarter. I showed you that. What did you think of that?
I think it's neat that people are backing it, and I hope they get to their funding goal. It's close to $1 million, though, just 50,000 shy of it.
I think they're at their funding goal. They said that they wanted $950,000, and they have $5,339,000 right now.
That's great.
It's for this game console. They claim they're going to build a game console that's based on Android. There's a lot of details that aren't finished. There's a lot of people that are skeptical, but they have a game console they're trying to build.
That's what makes the world great, you know? Why not? Do you think it's going to be successful?
Well, I think that there's kind of a small percentage chance, like 10, 20% chance that it'll be successful, but it would be really cool if it were successful. There's a lot of competition in the gaming market right now, and they're trying to build a console based on a touch operating system. You know, it's a lot of challenges. Have their own custom controller, maybe. It's a really challenging task, but I think it'd be really cool if they succeeded, you know, and got some widespread support. Well, you've been listening to the DGM Cloud podcast with me and Jessica.
Hi.
Thanks, Jessica.
Thank you for having me.
And you can go to the website and find out more at PacificPelican.us. I'm that's a song off of Jessica's and my new album from our band Niner. The album's called Niner 2, and I've been printing out some posters. I'm going to tack them up in some places around town. And if you want to do that too, that's cool. Go to the band website. It's just at blogs.sf3am.com/NEENER. And you can download MP3s of the music. You can see the video that we did recently about the new album. And you can also click on posters there, and that'll take you to the page with some posters. And some of them work pretty well with black and white printers. Like, we have an old black and white laser printer here, and we're actually going to shut it down, get rid of it pretty soon. And so this is the last, this might be the last batch of things that people are going to see come out of this printer. Because, you know, we've had it for years. And the printer is, you know, one of those things that used to be a very mainstream thing to have for anyone that had a computer. Now less and less, I would say, there's a need for it. And Jessica and I have debated whether we want to replace it with a printer. We probably will, because there are occasional needs to print stuff out. Let's say relatives visit. Sometimes people still rely on paper tickets a little more than other people these days who are using smartphones, stuff like that, for boarding planes. But I think we might get one of those AirPrint printers, but I don't know. We might just go without a printer for a while. But I'm printing out. I have some decent paper stock. I'm printing out some posters, and I'm going to tack them up some places. Well, you know, it's a second day for the podcast. It's July 22nd, 2012 now for this part, because we actually went to this festival out in Milan, Ohio. And if you want to check the show notes at djmcloud.com, look for Podcast 40. There's a link to a video where Jessica met celebrity chef Amanda Freitag. I think I have peaked as a gardener. I don't know. I'm willing to admit that. You know, I just, like, today we have 3 tomato plants that I plan to go in the backyard and plant. And you know what? I like perennials and I like evergreens. I really, like, in terms of growing vegetables, I don't know. You know, we've done some pretty good vegetable growing. We've gotten a few cucumbers. We've grown a little bit of lettuce and kale. You know, we've had a few tomatoes. But it's one of those things that I really don't feel the same commitment to it that I did a few years ago. I guess I just have other interests right now, and I'm not too worried about growing vegetables in the garden. I was pretty enthusiastic about it. But I'd rather kind of just go outside and do something else, like ride my bike, or actually I kind of have all this stuff to clean up in the yard. I gotta mow the lawn again. I'm kind of focusing on that, and the gardening part, I'm really just interested in filling in the most of the gardening area with, like, evergreen bushes, a few perennial flowers. That's the kind of stuff I like. And then maybe putting, like, a roof fence over it so the leaves don't just build up in the area. You know, this is an old neighborhood we live in here in Lakewood, Ohio, and it's an old town. It's the first town west of Cleveland, right along the lake. And so, like, I went through, like, 3 blocks from Lake Erie. So, the area has, it's been built for a while. The trees are really old. I have a tree in the yard here that there's restrictions on what you can do because it's considered an historic tree. I don't know. It might be, like, 100 years old. Many decades old anyway. And, you know, there's restrictions on what you can do. But not only that, it dumps branches. And for a few years, it seemed like, I don't know if it seemed like quite like it was dying or if it was just not well, but it was dropping huge branches and going, like, having the leaves go brown way early. And it seems to have righted itself a little bit, which is good. Because, you know, good for the tree. And also, there's less twigs or branches. I mean, I hesitate to call them twigs when they could have a 3-4-inch circumference. More than that. I would say 3 or 4 inch diameter on some of these branches. Big, heavy branches falling down on the yard, on the garage, on the roof here. So if you want to see, I have some pictures from the garden from 2009. That year, I really did a lot of gardening. Jessica, we worked together on this, so it's a team effort. But we really did a lot. And so if you want to see the photos from then, and we actually still have, I think one of the perennial flower bushes is still there. It's mostly different. And actually, there's a lot of area that's just cleared out now for planting. And I have to go try to plant those three tomato plants today, and we'll go from there. If you want to look at the link to the photos from the garden from a few years ago, go to the show notes, djmcloud.com. And I think, maybe I'll put some pictures up from the garden, but it really depends on how much I get done. And like I said, I kind of rather go and walk in the forest or, cycle around than just be in the backyard here for a lot of the time I have to be outside right now. So there's a story going around about how Google bought Sparrow. The Sparrow is an email client that had become pretty popular on the Mac, and they had released an iOS version. People were fans of it because they said it provided a native email client experience, that it was a more updated kind of evolution of a handheld email client. I think that the fans of Sparrow, some of them are actually upset enough to start saying that Google was interested in killing a competitor. Now, Google has a Gmail app that's free in the iOS App Store. Now, it comes with a lot of Android phones too, but now there's an iOS version, and there are still people that prefer to access their Gmail or their other email accounts through Sparrow rather than using the Gmail app. And now it turns out I'm not actually one of them, so it's hard for me to judge. Some of the people feel that the Sparrow users really feel like this was something to stop that competition. But I've actually been pretty satisfied with the Gmail client, with the Gmail app for iOS. And they actually have push notifications now. So, from my perspective, that's a good email app. And the Sparrow people might actually help make it better. Now, for people that are fans of Spiro, they're saying it's not going to be developed now, so that could be difficult from their perspective. They, you know, they're not going to be happy about that. Now, here's a clip from a song by Jim. Sent to me by Jim. I'll have to ask him if he's put it up on SoundCloud so I can put a link in future show notes. I've tried this new iOS app. It's an app called Bokeful for the iPhone. And it's currently free, and it seems like it's maybe a little bit rough still, a little bit unpolished. When you're trying to create bokehs, it isn't totally accurate. I think it's a really cool app. It's worth taking a look at. There have been bokeh filters in iOS apps before, but as far as I know, this one is actually kind of new and unique, because what it does is it allows the user to place the bokeh patterns manually. So they have a circle, they have a star, I think they have a heart and one other, and then you can choose a color palette, and then I haven't really figured out exactly whether there's some amount of like touch sensitivity to the way that the dots or whatever shape come out. But then you create the effect of a series of shapes, like dots, like popular bokeh patterns that happen in... It happens in photography when people are using certain types of cameras, where there will be lights that will be in a row or a pattern, or maybe not really in a pattern, but like a string of lights that are, because they're out of focus, they're a series of small circles. That's one way to describe the way that the bokeh effect looks. And this app is pretty cool. So you can actually create that effect, but in a random or user-designed pattern, not with some preset filter that's going to apply the same bokeh pattern. to every photo that uses that filter. And I think that the app maker is behind some other photo apps too. So they have a little bit of experience. But what I want to see is if they can continue to develop this. The company is called Active Development, and I know that they have at least one other photo app. The PicFrame is probably the best known one. That one is one of those diptych apps that allows multiple pictures to be placed within one frame. Those have gotten pretty popular for sharing on sites like Instagram and stuff lately. Well, I did the gardening that I was talking about. On the other hand, at this point in the recording, it is Monday, July 23rd, 2012. And as we continue, I was thinking about the model for podcasts and more generally for online, ventures of different sorts, whether they're different types of creative outlets, whether it's a audio podcast or some sort of video show or, you know, an app. I think that a lot of people want to find a sustainable model for them being able to create and share. And in a lot of cases, people have a substantial audience, but they need to find a way to bring in income if they're going to be able to deploy a lot of resources on that project or all their resources on that project. So there's all those options like Kickstarter and Indiegogo and GoFundMe. There's these different options where people can go online and ask for, you know, for funding. But in terms of a direct customer relationship, there's sites that have optional or required subscriptions, and then, you know, like there are attempts going on, like the site that is going by the name app.net. They're trying to fund themselves to the amount of $500,000 to create what they're talking about is a next generation app platform or something, but what sounds like it might be an attempted successor to Twitter. And, you know, I think that while trying to fund the service and then having that relationship where you're paying for the product is a good ideal, look at Google buying Sparrow, and you see that a company that relies on advertising bought a company that relied on people paying for the app. So it's unclear what the real model is. This is a Screen Bird song.
Wait.
that song is called Riding at Night, and it's from the Screambird project that I do. That's kind of my musical side project. And you know, in terms of the model for this podcast, well, there's different ways to look at it. Like you have podcasts that charge for download. That's a rare model that hasn't really taken off. But if you think about the idea about like apps, like do you want a free app driven by advertising, or do you want to pay for the app? And for podcasting, there, you know, you hear discussions about podcasters charging, but it seems like even the ones that charge might charge for archive access, but it's rare to have a podcaster charge per episode. Instead, they load the episode with advertising. And I think that advertising in podcasts is much more crammed in along with the content than on websites, where often there's a sidebar and often the ads will change and the ads can eventually be removed. The podcasts, when people do ad reads in podcasts, they're just there in the recording, whether the company still has a relationship with the podcaster a few years later or whether the company's even still around. If that podcast archive is available, it's going to be there. You can see the archives and see podcast 10 if you want to hear a little more discussion about what I think about podcast advertising and Audible. But that's for other podcasts. As far as this podcast, we have the very, very light model, if there is any at all, of having a few MP3s by my Screambird project, including the song you heard recently. You can buy them for 99 cents on the Google Play Store. So if you want to see a link to that, you can check out the Screambird official website at screambird.djmcloud.com.
You have to go.
No.
You have to go.
No.
Come out.
No.
Come out now.
No.
Why not?
No.
Who do you think you are?
No.
Who do you think why? What's your name? What's your name?
Sam Manila Sacramento de Maria.
Textbook.
What's your name, devil?
That's quite a clip. The ChristianNightmares.tumblr.com blog always has crazy stuff on it. And then, you know, actually had another clip that I thought, you know, one time Jessica and I were discussing zombies one time on the show. But it turns out that I think we put zombies in the show notes. We never really talked about them on air. We were talking about the pop culture phenomenon. So, plenty of people are jumping onto it, as you can see.
Recently, we have had a spate of horrific zombie attacks in which people cannibalize other people.
I don't
know. In other words, they eat their flesh.
Like an animal.
And in fact, I warned about this more than 7 months ago when I did a series of programs on the messages which the Blessed Virgin Mary gave to mankind at La Salette, France.
I don't know.
She refers to these zombie attacks in the end times, along with UFOs, for example. But I have been thinking lately, is it possible that these zombie attacks, these flesh-eating incidents, are a warning about the bear in Daniel chapter number 7?
See?
That's
the kind of question that I think, you know, I don't know. I think there might be people asking it. I don't know why you'd ask it, but what about the bear? You know, there's a lot of people that aren't really discussing the bear. So you know, Yeah, consider what that guy said, or don't really.
And devour much flesh.
Daniel 7, verse number 5. And behold, another beast, like a bear, stood up on one side, and there were three ribs in the mouth thereof, and in the teeth. And they said thus to it, Arise, devour much flesh.
I wonder if the people at Chick-fil-A read that passage and acted on it. Well, a lot of people have been talking about the long count, Mayan calendar, or whatever. And I can't say that, I've heard all sorts of things about Quetzalcoatl and the calendar and 2012. I think that the actual significance of it, to me, it's a little more interesting than the typical millennial panic. There's many, many fundamentalist religions throughout history have predicted an impending end times, an impending apocalypse, a shatan or whatever. And, you know, I think that's just kind of a kooky belief that just seems strange, just disturbingly common. But I don't know. I don't know what's really driving the 2012 idea, but I think that a lot of people are looking at the systems in the world, whether the financial or legal or social, the conventions and the traditions that people live under, and the barbarism and the violence that they see around them, and they are ready for a new kind of alignment, a new kind of set of priorities. And so I think that it's something that attracts a lot of people, and also it represents an interesting, you know, focal point for the many sides of the new psychedelic movement. You have a lot of people that are into crop circles or talk about gray aliens, or people to talk about mythical beasts like the goat man or the chupacabras, and I'm not saying these are all the same people. There's maybe some crossover, but there's people that talk about government conspiracies, and there's a certain blurred line now because governments, including the American government, are so incredibly corrupt and violent and willing to ignore rights of both citizens and non-citizens, that it's a situation where, you know, the line between what's a conspiracy and what's a factual report about the acts of the government, you know, is kind of a blurred line, and there's a lot of people who just won't believe what is going on, like things like drones killing not just supposed militant men, but women and children and people just being targeted, even if they're American citizens, while they're overseas, and the National Defense Authorization Act and all the attempts to put SOPA and PIPA in place to allow Hollywood to take even more power, and they already have too much in terms of so-called intellectual property. And, you know, the artistic world, I think, and I can discuss this in the afterword of my book, the new afterword to my book, Like Any Gangster. In the afterword, I actually mentioned that I think that if you look at Hollywood movies, that they're in decline. There were gray ones, and I don't think you really see gray ones. Certainly not with much frequency anymore. I think that commercially funded art has reached such a degraded state in terms of its artistry and its creativity, and instead it's just there to reinforce the myths of the state and the myths of power. And you know, the reason that they're pushing harder, is it that the culture is more inquisitive and they're trying to bottle it up more, or I don't know all the different factors that are causing this, but I think that when people look at all this, all these currents swirling around, they see a hope, if not an opportunity, for new thinking, for new priorities, and the foundation of new kinds of cooperation. And so that's something that I I'm interested in. So if I would like to see, you know, if people will, whatever the alignment of the planets and whatever the significance of December of 2012, I'd like to see people use the opportunity for a new perspective. Thank you.